Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Rabbi Joe Black, Jewish recording artist, singer, songwriter, limerick composer, and senior rabbi of Temple Emmanuel in Denver. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish Mavena on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. As this eventful first month of 2017 winds down, I'd like to continue to explore a question I raised last week here on Two Jewish. Is it true that most people in society and most groups feel that they are somehow discriminated against? We Jews certainly have felt that way for many centuries, but why are we experiencing such an epidemic of people feeling as though they don't have real opportunities for success in our land of the free? It may be most obvious when our new president tweets out his resentment of those who don't fully appreciate him, but it has become nearly epidemic that many of us, perhaps most of us, maybe even all of us, somehow have come to feel that our American society discriminates against us. This is quite the opposite of what has made our country the envy of the world and the landing place for generation after generation of immigrants. America has always been the land of opportunity, the place where a man or woman of humble origins could rise to success through hard work, talent, and intelligence. In fact, the strength of our country has been its ability to give new people with new ideas the chance to make them happen in every field of endeavor. This is why America has been such a great place for Jews, the real Golden Medina for most of our immigrant ancestors. In these United States, we Jews have had the opportunity to help create brand new economic spheres through pure American ingenuity. The motion picture industry, the popular music business, Silicon Valley, to name just a few. There aren't many places, perhaps any places in the world, in which immigrants like Louis B. Mayer and Sam Goldwyn and the Warner Brothers could invent the movie studios, or Sergey Brin could found a company like Google, or middle-class Jewish kids like Mark Zuckerberg could start Facebook. It is America that gave Steven Spielberg and David Geffen the chance to build creative film and music empires, and it is only in the U.S. that Michael Bloomberg could start out the son of a bookkeeper and become the eighth richest person in the world by creating a new form of financial information service. There are so many examples we could give just from our own people of women and men who created something extraordinary after starting with nothing much but their own talent, intelligence, and hard work. So it's distressing to think that so many people today believe that the American system is somehow rigged against them, or that there are evil forces out there that refuse to allow them to have the opportunity to flourish. It seems to me, ironically, that it is immigrants to our country who have always seen the incredible openness of our society to new ideas and have been willing to work extremely hard and take the chances necessary to succeed. And they give us so much. There will always be inequities in life and in any society, and it is to all of our advantage to minimize those inequities and open things up so that everyone can find the best path to success. As Pirkei Avot, the ethics of our ancestors in the Mishnah puts it, doing is the principal thing. Our tradition, Jewish tradition, strongly advocates utilizing the opportunities that are presented to us to best advantage, making those opportunities available to everybody. I personally don't think we need to make America great again. It is already great. We do need to encourage the full development of the remarkable potential we already have and help people succeed. In our great diversity is one of our greatest strengths. And in our American ability to constantly try new ideas and processes and technologies, we have a way to fuel human creativity and talent and attract people of initiative and energy from all over the world. Let's embrace and celebrate the many opportunities our society gives all of us to flourish. Now, I promise not to kvetch next week about all the kvetching I've been hearing. Persecution or not, we have a country that does give us the chance to rise and accomplish whatever we're willing to work and strive for. At least for this rabbi, that is a great gift, something very much worth feeling grateful for. To play us in this morning, here are two prayers settings for the Mishkan Tefillah Prayer Book, the Reformed Jewish Movement, from our guest today, Rabbi Joe Black.
May it be beautiful before me. May it be beautiful behind me. May it be beautiful below me. May it be beautiful above me. May it be beautiful all around me. Restore me in beauty. Life for health, for hope, for beautiful, bountiful blessing, all praise to the source of being. For life, for health, for hope, for beautiful, bountiful blessing, all praise to the source of being. Baruch Ata Adonai, Mekor Nefesh Kol Chai. May it be beautiful before me. May it be beautiful behind me. May it be beautiful.
Those were two prayers from Rabbi Joe Black. The multi-talented Rabbi Joe Black is a Jewish recording artist, singer, songwriter, limerick writer, and senior rabbi of Temple Emmanuel in Denver. Meet him when we return in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Hi, my name is Lauriella, and I'd like to tell you how you can help send children like me to a Jewish day school at no cost to you. Arizona allows its taxpayers to receive a tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations such as JETCO. JETCO is the only tuition organization solely dedicated to Jewish education in Tucson. JETCO provides scholarships to children who attend qualified private schools like Congregation Anshai Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, which educates students from grades K through 8th. You may give up to $1,087 for single tax filers and $2,173 for married couples who file jointly. Jewish education nurtures Jewish identity for generations of students like me, so please go online and visit our website at www.jetco.org or give JETCO a call at 647-8442. Again, that's 647-8442. And tell them Lauriella sent you.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, our guest this morning, our old friend, Rabbi Joe Black, not so old, maybe I'm old. He's the senior rabbi of Temple Emmanuel, a prominent Jewish recording artist, and a limerick author of great distinction. Good morning and welcome, Joe.
Good morning. Thanks. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours, always. So let's talk a little bit about Jewish music. You've been doing Jewish music now for a long time. You have your own inimitable creative style. What do you see going on in Jewish music today? How does it differ from what you're used to, what you become used to?
Well, I think there are certain things that remain constant, and some of the, the only thing that's constant is change, right? But There are things that are new and cutting edge, and there are also things that are always as they have been. I mean, Jewish music is a huge field. It runs from I have a friend who's an amazing guitarist. His name is Tim Sparks, and he records on the John Zorn label. And he's an Appalachian kid, who's not Jewish at all, but who records klezmer on the Masada label.
Right.
That's very Jewish, and he's amazing. To Hasidic and klezmer and Jewish bluegrass or Jewgrass, as they call it. I mean, there's lots of different categories. I guess my niche, as it were, is Jewish contemporary music, and I see a lot of young, exciting, dynamic young people coming on the scene, which is nice. For a while, I was worried that there weren't any, but I think that's not the case anymore.
Don't we always worry about that?
Yeah, I think so. I do.
It seems to me that in many ways, people are more accepting of wider varieties of Jewish music, and there's more access to it through YouTube, through the web, stuff that you just couldn't otherwise find, or you had to go to camp to hear. Now you can get it kind of everywhere.
I just played a concert a couple days ago on a Facebook page called Harmony in Unison, which was put together by two friends of mine, Beth Schaefer and Stacy, what's Stacy's last name? No? Stacy by from Nashville. Oh, good. It'll come back. I'm getting old, you think? But anyway, so they have over 10,000 people now who are subscribed to this page, and every day there's a live concert. And if you go to Harmony in Unison on Facebook, you can sign up and be on it as well. So I did a concert, and Julie Silver did a concert. Stacy Byer, that's her name. Stacy did a concert.
Stacy Byer, right.
And lots of other people, Josh Nelson, and names, and some new people as well. We spend an hour, and the ability to broadcast over the internet through Facebook or Facebook Live or Skype or whatever it might be, it has changed the way that people are seen and experienced, which I think is fantastic. When I was starting out 26 years ago, you had to perform at a Cage conference or a biennial, or there's no way to get your music out there. Now there is, and that's, I think, a total game changer. So there's lots of people of all ages who are doing all kinds of creative things. Some of it's very good.
A lot of it's good. Some may not be, but that's okay. It just gives you an opportunity to really explore. We will come back in just a couple of moments with Rabbi Joe Black here on Two Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So your product is kosher?
Yes. The base ingredients, the propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, are both certified kosher, USP grade. It's basically the same product that's put in asthma inhalers.
Where do you get your flavorings from?
Our flavorings come from Flavor Art in Italy. It is definitely the finest flavorings in the world.
And people have a variety of choices.
Yes, they do. We've got over 500 flavors.
Now, the quality of what you provide is very important.
Yes, it is. When people come in, we first find out what kind of cigarettes they've been using, so we know the approximate level of nicotine they'll need. Then we fit them with a flavor that would be perfect for them.
How can people find out more? Where can they go?
They can do one of a couple of things. They can visit us on our website at freedomsmokeusa.com. That's all one word. or call us on our 800 number, 800-705-7013.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website. Streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Mexico has a very interesting and very ancient Jewish community. I mean, ancient for the New World, goes back to the 16th century. Mexico City is a very interesting Jewish place. You were there recently. Some of your thoughts.
Well, first of all, when you say Mexico has an ancient Jewish community, most of the Jews you meet there today can't trace their roots back earlier than the 30s because they're descended from essentially Holocaust refugees.
Yes, Jews from Poland or Germany who came in the 30s, right?
So, although you're absolutely right that historically there are Jews there with deep roots who were fleeing the Inquisition, I mean, in the 15th and 16th centuries and arrived with the colonists, most Jews that you meet in Mexico today, and certainly those you meet in Mexico City, are of a much more recent vintage. As I understand it from Mexican Jews and from other sources, there are roughly 50,000 Jews in all of Mexico, and maybe slightly more than half of those live in Mexico City, and the rest are scattered through other big cities. Now, two things might be of interest to your listeners. One is that the last time I was in Mexico City, I worked for the World Union of Jewish Students as the Minister of Education and Culture, and I was there on a work trip. So I didn't do any sightseeing. I didn't see any of the like museums or the tourist attractions or the Zocalo or any of those things. I instead saw lots of Jewish student organizations. I saw the Israeli embassy. I met with the shaliach. I went to the Jewish Community Center, which is
gorgeous, you know, as I recall.
Like more splendid and luxurious than any country club I've ever seen.
I remember it. It's spectacular.
So that Jewish Community Center, if any Mexican non-Jews have ever seen it, they clearly would get the impression that all Jews are incredibly wealthy and have lots of power and can maintain this gorgeous space for themselves and their kids to enjoy their leisure activities in. It was quite an amazing thing. So all of that I saw on a trip that I made more than 30 years ago. This trip back was to do all the tourist things that I missed and wasn't particularly focused on Jews, except for one very interesting conversation, which I think I'll retell in detail maybe next week because we're sort of running out of time.
You know, was recently in Mexico City, and it's an incredible, dynamic place. But the Jewish community has a variety of actively functioning synagogues. There's kosher restaurants, good kosher restaurants. It's surprising for someone who doesn't understand the breadth of the Mexican Jewish community even today. We will talk some more next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivi Na on Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
You know, Israeli society, although most people think of it as a religious society, it's really not. The large majority of Israelis are chilonim, secular Jews. They do Shabbat. They know Jewish holidays. They know the Tanakh, the Bible. But there's been a real increase in Israeli society in approaching traditional Jewish texts in a different way and understanding them, whether it's critical or literary. And you have a favorite author in this area.
Yes. So from the very first, you know, Tzabarim, the Tzabars that really wanted to be the new Jew and kind of neglected the book, wanted to be Chaklai. But all of them came from a background of being like a son or a grandson of a rabbi.
Right.
Big
they had
rabbis.
Tremendous yeshiva backgrounds, many of them, a great deal of knowledge of Jewish texts.
Nachon. But then they established the kibbutzim and they celebrated everything without neglecting their big hero of the Judaism, which is God. But it's okay. But, yeah. So it was more Jewish as a culture in a very best situation.
Even the festivals became agricultural festivals, not God-oriented festivals,
and
so on.
When the decades went through, and people just was looking, and I'm looking for like kind of a meaningful, okay, so we established the country, we have a country, like, okay, we had this great ideology, now what? So we are Israelis, it's not easy to live in Israel, what really keeps us here? And so many of Israelis just was looking for like meaning, why we're really here. And some of them just wanted to reread the Bible and have a fresh look. And some of them reconnected to the Bible as we know them. But anyway, so many books right now you can find in Stematsky in Israel, just
the famous
giving
bookstore chain Stematsky,
Bidiuk,
right?
Like the Israeli Barnes and Noble, kind of. And taking a fresh look of the Bible, one of my favorite authors, she is actually a religious woman from a very Haredian society.
Ultra-Orthodox.
So she brings with her like huge knowledge of, you know, the Judaism and reading the
and
Bible.
And all the Midrashic traditions mystical traditions, everything.
Plus, she allowed herself by all, you know, the seminars and her travel around the world, meeting with all the Jewish communities and working with secular Jews in Israel, bring like a fresh look of you know, the Bible. And that's why I love her books. And her recent book...
And her name is?
Yochi Brandes. Sorry. And her new book called The Judaism That We Never Met Before.
Right.
And she allow us to look on a very timely issues and get some answers from the Bible. And an answer that will surprise you. So many things I love about this book, but one of them, since we have like only a few minutes, is the basic right to establish a house, a Jewish house, which is very, very basic right. And the way she explore and explain us and show us that all our leaders basically did not grow up in a very normative house with a father, mother, two dogs, and few brothers and sisters.
Yeah, it was never like that. If you want to read about family dysfunction, read the book of Genesis, or start with Exodus, or King David's story, or everybody's is just a mess.
Or
Solomon.
Shlomo.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you. And it's Yochi Brandes. I don't think most of her books have been translated to English yet, but they will be, I promise.
Yeah.
Thanks, Oshra. We'll talk next time. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Good morning, Boker Tov.
I'm a rabbi. Rabbi means, technically speaking, master.
But yes, really, master.
Yeah, yeah. But it really means master in the sense of teacher, someone who masters a subject and conveys
it. Like mastery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Teachers have a very different kind of role in society from what they used to. And schools have a different place. Have that authoritative structure that we might have grown up with doesn't have the same feel anymore.
Mm.
Let's explore that a little bit.
Sure. You know, as society evolves and cultures change over time, things shift with schools too. Schools very much mirror so many things about what's going on societally, be it politics, be it secularism or modernization. And, you know, in each era for a religious school, kind of defining ourselves and understanding who we are is really critical, because only when we know what we stand for and what we're about can we teach others and share the way with others. So teachers have a difficult job. Teaching already is complicated. And, you know, as time evolves, I've been in the business, quite a while now, a couple of decades. And, and you kind of see that schools take on more of the role of many things that didn't used to be the case in days of yore, such as counseling and some aspects of parenting, and even, you know, medicine and other kinds of things. So the demands on school expand because the needs of families grow and the needs in a community grow. Teachers have to be masters of their domain, masters of their subject area. They also have to have a mastery of teaching strategy and skill, We call that pedagogy. But they also have to know children and understand the developmental stages of children and know children as individuals. When a teacher can make the connection with a child because they know that child and they respect that child and they understand what gets that kid going, then the best kinds of teaching can flourish.
You know, we talk about classroom management.
Mm-hmm.
I was taught that when I was, I think I was taught that. Not sure I follow any of the things they taught me exactly, but
that really maybe what makes you a good rabbi.
That must be it. But it isn't really classroom management. It's really kind of group psychology and to some degree understanding how to connect.
Sure, sure. You know, the most effective class managers, first of all, they have engaged kids who are busy working. But on top of that, they understand the individuals and they understand how the individuals come together and form a group and how that group works and the ways to, work with that group, manipulate, if you will. It sounds kind of draconian or I don't know if that's the best choice word.
It sounds manipulative, but it is really.
But how to work the group and what the group needs to be the most successful.
And for the individuals to be successful within that group.
Yep.
Thanks, John. We will talk next week.
Have a great day.
When we return on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates serving Tucsonians living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. One day in the woods, a Jewish hiker suddenly sees a giant grizzly bear. The bear sees him, too, and starts to chase him. The guy manages to stay ahead for a while, but finally the bear corners him. Giving up all hope, knowing he is about to be eaten, the terrified hiker begins to sing the Shema, the last word a Jew says before death. Shema Israel. To his shock, the grizzly stops right in front of him. Then the bear, too, begins to recite in Hebrew, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the world. The hiker is overjoyed, relieved. What are the odds he'd be chased by a Jewish bear? God is gracious. How lucky he is. He's going to live. And then the hiker hears the bear's final words. Hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Thank you, God, who brings us food to eat. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah.
This week, our people gets out of Egypt, or to be more accurate, we chant the Torah portion of Bo that includes the description of the exodus from Egyptian slavery and the establishment of the rites and rituals of the observance of the Passover. The build-up to this week's Parsha has been steady and dramatic. Plague follows plague, 10 of them, of course, rising in severity as the one God overcomes a long roster of Egyptian gods and idols and frees the people of Israel from their long night of oppression and slavery. Finally, in Bo, our ancestors become a free people. Since we are now liberated, you might expect us to immediately cast off the memory of oppression and enslavement, to reject our history of degradation, move on to new and better things. Oddly, God, through Moses, commands us to do quite the opposite, to remember the slavery and how we were freed only by God's great acts. And from this point on, we are reminded repeatedly in the Torah to remember those in our own society who are oppressed, to help them, because after all, we ourselves were slaves in the land of Egypt. You are strangers in a strange land, we tell ourselves repeatedly in the Torah. Therefore, recalling our degradation, we must help the oppressed and protect the strangers in our land. I can think of no other people or nation that spends so much effort remembering how humble its origins were. Unlike so many other national myths, we Jews do not highlight our ancient and sacred pedigree or our divine origin. Instead, we remind ourselves again and again that we are the descendants of slaves who had nothing to call our own, not even our bodies. Even on holidays that have nothing to do with the Exodus or freedom, we incorporate our memory of slavery and liberation. Every Kiddush, every single Shabbat includes the phrase that we are celebrating Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, to recall the Exodus from Egyptian slavery. The message is powerful. We are supposed to remember the fact of our own oppression so that we will identify with those in our world today who need our help. The Seder of Bo teaches us that we must seek always to redeem the world through our own action. Our connection is with the lowly. Our efforts to heal the world come from the knowledge that we ourselves have exactly that same background. It's a profound lesson in humility that leads directly to charity, tzedakah, and the promulgation of righteousness, tzedek, in the world. Even in challenging times, perhaps especially in challenging times, we must remember those who are oppressed, who have less than we do. And no matter how much we rise in the world, no matter how influential or powerful our people may be or our Jewish nation may become, we are always supposed to identify with those who have less and need our help. Today, in fact, there are still slaves in the world. Not metaphoric slaves, actual human beings subjugated by others. January is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month, by the way. As a U.S. presidential proclamation stated, human trafficking occurs in countries throughout the world and in communities across our own nation. Children are forced to fight as soldiers, young people coerced into prostitution, migrants exploited. People from all walks of life are trafficked every day. The current estimate is that 45 million people, that's 45 million, exist in some form of slavery today. These include children and adults forced to perform slave labor, women and men coerced into prostitution or serial rape in harems, children forced to become soldiers, debt bondage, women sold into forced marriage, human trafficking, many other forms of slavery. There are countries where as much as 4% of the population is made up of slaves. In fact, 5 countries in the world have more than 1 million people in slavery right now. On this week, when the Torah teaches us of our liberation from slavery, I urge you to go to audacityfactory.org, that's audacityfactory.org, and explore the ways in which you can support Parshat Bo's great message, making a true difference for freedom. When we return on To Jewish, our guest Rabbi Joe Black will share some of his wonderful limericks and explore Jewish music today. Hear them both when we come back on To Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, Children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates, serving Tucsonans living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Sandy Seltzer.
President Donald Trump has repeated the promise he made during the presidential campaign that if elected, he would move the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Clearly, he stated, "I haven't forgotten what I said while running for office." He is not the first chief executive to have spoken this way. Both Barack Obama and George W. Bush made similar commitments but never implemented them. In response, the director of Israel's foreign ministry has taken a wait-and-see attitude, expressing cautious optimism that the embassy move will actually take place. In a disturbing postscript to the inaugural ceremonies, which included prayers offered by six clergy, the prayer offered by Rabbi Marvin Heyer was met with hundreds of anti-Semitic statements on social media. Some called for lighting Jews on fire, others claiming that Jews put a spell on us, or made references to Hitler and gas chambers. Heyer, the founder of the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles, is the first rabbi since the presidential inauguration of 1985 to deliver a prayer on this occasion. He is a personal friend of Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Germany's Jewish Council has condemned the statements of the leader of that country's right-wing political party, the AfD, Alternatives for Germany, Bjorn Höcke. Höcke, at a recent party gathering, referred to a monument built in the heart of Berlin commemorating the Holocaust as, quotes, a monument of shame, which makes German history look rotten and ridiculous, end of quote. The chair of the Jewish Council labeled Höcke's remarks deeply upsetting and totally unacceptable, something hard to believe just 70 years after the Holocaust. Spokespersons for every other political party in the country, as well as government officials, were equally critical, Germany's vice chancellor calling it shocking and a form of demagoguery. It is estimated that the AfD will attract anywhere from 15% to 20% of voters in the forthcoming German elections scheduled for September. And in a cinematic first, a new motion picture filmed entirely in Yiddish will be shown at this year's Sundance Film Festival and then at the Berlin Film Festival. The movie, called Menashe, the name of its leading character, provides intimate glimpses into the Chabad Hasidic community of which he is a part. It tells the story of a young man, poor, inept, barely able to hold a job, a single father with a young child trying to raise the boy alone after the death of his wife, and who, because of his situation, is informed by the community that he must give up the child. And that's the Two Jewish News.
We are delighted to welcome back to Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Joe Black, one of the most enjoyable performers of Jewish music on the scene today and for a while now, and the senior rabbi of Temple Emanuel in Denver, Colorado, and a great limerick author. That's not something everybody knows about you.
tell us a little bit about your biblical limericks.
So, I think it becomes a bit of an obsession. I started writing limericks for every Torah portion about 4 or 5 years ago, actually on a dare from a colleague of mine. I just started, you know, each week I'd write a different limerick for the Parsha, and I started, and they just sort of grew, and it became a lot of fun. And then somebody said, well, could you publish some of them? And I did a Kickstarter campaign, and lo and behold, boom, there it was.
And suddenly you had a means of publishing limericks. What's your favorite one?
I don't have a copy of the book here in front of me, and I should, but I'm looking online. My favorite one, I have several. As we record this, I'm not sure when this is going to air. Am I giving away a trade secret here?
Yeah, everybody thinks it's brand new and live, and you're...
We're reading Parshat Shemot, right, which is the beginning of the book of Exodus, obviously, so...
About a week ago, then.
Then it was last week.
Yeah, there you go.
A new pharaoh sat on the throne, but Joseph, to him, was not known. Of the Jews, he said rudely, we must deal with them shrewdly, lest they try and make Egypt their own. You know, the goal is to sort of encapsulate an important idea in the Torah and make it accessible and fun, and they are fun. The book is called There Once Was a Man from Canaan, The Five Books of Limerick. You can find it on Amazon.com. And I actually printed it in Israel. A friend of mine is a graphic designer there. And when I was publishing it, it was a very difficult time. There was a lot of attacks, so I figured we printed it in Ashkelon, which was, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And it still was a good idea from a supporting Israel perspective. From a financial perspective, it wasn't a great idea, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I'm sure. By the way, Shemot is my Torah portion. It was my bar mitzvah portion, so you owe me a royalty on that. I just...
Done.
When I started my congregation, it's also Temple Emmanuel. It's part of the Emmanuel franchise. I brought in a bunch of new music, and after, like 3 or 4 weeks, I got a little, let's add some stuff. So we changed 3 or 4 melodies. When we started with the music that we brought in, everybody really thought it was great. It was lovely. 4 weeks later, we tried, I think, three or four different melodies on Friday night, and people came up to me after services and said, Rabbi, you've changed everything. You took away our traditional melodies.
Yeah, the traditional melodies go all the way back to Mount Sinai.
They go back to Mount Sinai 4 weeks ago, so...
All the music has changed. It's no longer what it was.
Yeah, you've ruined it for me.
And they only come, and what they're only coming is Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Yes, of course. Or they come on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and they say, the music is always the same. I always hear the same thing.
Exactly.
It's there's perception and reality. That's true in music as it is in anything in life. How often do you vary things? How do you change things now that you've established your own musical nosach, if you will, your own feel?
Well, first of all, I want to say that it's my cantor who is in charge of the musical vision of our congregation. I'm part of that, but it's not my... That's not. I mean, I really entrust everything to cantor. Elizabeth Sachs is wonderful. But when we do introduce new music, you do it slowly, you do it gradually, a couple of weeks in a row, you introduce a new piece, and then you stop for a while and you bring it back. We also will use the web, we'll use, certainly in the religious school, our congregation is blessed because we also have our own summer camp, Camp Schwader, in the mountains, in the Rocky Mountains on Mount Evans. So a lot of our kids go to Schwader Camp, so they want to bring that music back into the congregation. That's always the way it has been. That's where I began my love of Jewish music, was at summer camp as well. So I think there's lots of different modalities. We have concerts. We bring in Jewish performers. Our major fundraiser every year, for example, is a big concert. This year, we're doing David Broza, the Israeli super.
Yeah, and a multiple guest of Two Jewish, I might add, and an incredible guitarist, great player.
Amazing, yeah. So, and I know David. I've been fortunate to play with him before. Which is,
yeah.
But we've had Josh Nelson and Neshama Karlbach. We've had Julie Silver and Beth Schaefer and Harry Smilo and Michelle Citrin. And I brought in the Maxwell Street Klezmer Band from Chicago, who are dear friends of mine. So the congregation is at this point used to being exposed to lots of different musical modalities after 7 years. They have no choice. But I think they like it for the most part. Some people don't. You know, in a congregation this large, if everybody liked everything, I'd be doing something wrong, which is impossible. So.
Yeah, if people don't like something you're doing, you're not trying hard enough.
Exactly, exactly, right.
What do you like best about being a rabbi?
I like many things. I think for me, the knowledge that no matter what happens during the day, and it could be a difficult day. I could have a funeral, or I could have a visiting someone in the hospital and who's dying, or I could have a fight with a member of the congregation, or I can get an angry letter. At some point during the day, every day, I've done something to make a difference. And I know that when I go home, even if it was frustrating, I have done something to make the world a better place. Each day is unique. Each day is different. I love being Jewish. I love sharing that love with others. And for me, I feel like I'm making a difference in people's lives. So that's what I love most about being a rabbi. That and the free lunches.
You have lots of free food. You need an exercise regimen just to survive working as a congregational rabbi.
Yeah, exactly.
Where do you get your ideas from, your creativity? How do you nurture it? Because, you know, we're busy people. I mean, congregational rabbis, you got a lot of stuff to do. When do you find the time? How do you make the time?
You know, that's something that I think all of us struggle with, no matter what it is that we do, whether it's music or writing or painting or making radio shows, or singing in your case as well. I find that oftentimes I have no choice. An idea will come to me, sometimes as a gift, sometimes I feel compelled. Like the limericks was a good example. I mean, I truly went on a jag where I was thinking just in that form, and I couldn't stop. Sometimes I'll get an idea for a song or a poem or a sermon that I can't. I have to sit down and do it. I have to put aside other things and write it because I can't do anything else. Other times I have to really work at it, and it becomes a discipline where I say I need to set aside, you know, an hour a day or 3 hours a week. If I don't practice my guitar, for example, I've been playing guitar for over 40 years now, and I still have to practice. I still have to work. I still have to get better. Otherwise, it's no longer a challenge for me. I live for that challenge. So I've given you several answers, but the basic answer is sometimes ideas come to me and say, I have no choice. I'm compelled to do it. And other times they say, I need to do this for my own spiritual and mental health as well.
I remember there was once a president of the Central Council of American Rabbis who argued that rabbis should have a day off and then a day off just for writing and creativity. And those of us who actually worked in congregations kind of laughed because I'm lucky if I get the day off as a day off, even if I use it for writing. In the course of your rabbinate, you've seen changes in Amcha and the people that you serve. What changes do you see? Do you see actual generational differences? People talk about millennial generation. They talk about the next generation after the millennials. What do you see?
Yeah, there are several things. I think a key thing that every congregation has to deal with is a change in the meaning of affiliation. What does it mean to be affiliated? It was when I was growing up, when you were growing up, even when my kids, to some degree, although not so much anymore, growing up, that being affiliated means you joined a synagogue, and that's that being part of a synagogue was what one did as a Jew. I think we are in a fee-for-service society where people don't necessarily see belonging as a prerequisite to identifying as Jewish. You can identify with Jewish and not be part of anything, or you can go from A, B, C, D, or E. And so I think the congregations that are not aware of this, that are not adapting to this, that are not preparing for this will not survive. What does it mean to be a member of a congregation? What does it mean to pay dues? There's a whole financial component, which, of course, without, you know, it says in the Talmud, if you
Ein kemach ein Torah, indeed, right?
Right. If you don't have flour, you don't have Torah. If you don't have Torah, you don't have flour. You know, that or money. They work both ways. But that's not. It's not just about finances, because it was only about finances. But then it's just about keeping the institution alive for no other reason. I think the role of the synagogue has to be, instead of just serving the people, helping to inspire a love of Judaism so that they want to be part of that. And that's a whole new way of looking at things. I cannot assume that just because we're Temple Emmanuel of Denver, Colorado, we're Temple Emmanuel of Tucson, Arizona, people are going to come. So that we have to, because the competition out there, And it's not really competition. Our partners out there are saying, you don't need to be a member. You can become bar mitzvah. Just hire a rabbi. Or you don't need, or you don't need to affiliate with the community. You can do many number of things. So that's a big piece. I think the whole brick and mortar idea of what a synagogue is, you know, we have a huge plant. We have a huge building. Thank God we're doing well. I'm not complaining. But there are a lot of congregations that aren't and have to sort of rethink and reimagine, re-envision what it means to be a synagogue. That, I think, is a big, a huge change. Another, I think, is, of course, the rates of intermarriage. I think bringing different perspectives into the Jewish community. I'm not so sure intermarriage is a bad or a good thing. I don't want to get into that conversation, but it is a reality for sure that, with the exception of the Orthodox community, almost any American congregation today is going to have a lot of people who either were not born Jewish or are not currently Jewish. How you serve them, how you, the shared language, the shared knowledge, the shared expectations are all different as well. And then the other thing is cross-denominationalism, whatever.
Yeah, that's a fancy word, isn't it?
Yeah. But that, you know, used to be, we're a Reform congregation, we're a conservative congregation, we're North. People are not necessarily joining synagogues because of the movement with which they are affiliated, but rather of because of proximity, because of the rabbi, because of the program, because of the dues structure, because of all kinds of reasons. So we are constantly marketing, but not just marketing to get members and money, but marketing to say this is who we are. And we also need to be very much in close touch with our communities to see what it is that they need. So it's a very different skill set. I think I've nurtured it, but what I learned in seminary 30 years ago when I was ordained, I'm not sure much of it applies, or a lot of it does not apply the way that it does in terms of practical rabbinic.
Yeah, I mean, and the way they teach practical rabbinics is always going to be for whatever the generation that's passed has been. I think there's no way to avoid that.
At the same time, let me just sort of flip, you know, the rabbit, there's got to be two sides.
Yeah, sure.
There still is a need for teaching Torah. There still is a need for meeting the needs of our community when they're at their greatest simchas and at their sorrows. So that hasn't changed, and it won't.
It will never change, and neither will the need for rabbinic leadership or for great Jewish music. I want to thank Rabbi Joe Black for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out the most about you?
Oh, gosh. You know, the thing is, you can go to rabbijoeblack.com. It's all one word. The best way, really, is through Facebook. Just follow me on Facebook. Just Joe Black or Rabbi Joe Black. There's a Rabbi Joe Black music page you can find. Probably the best way. I don't do, again, as a congregational rabbi, most of what I'm doing now is my congregation. I do a few things here and there around the country, but not a lot anymore because I have a big congregation that I feel blessed to serve.
Continue to feel that way. Thanks so much, Joe. We'll talk again.
All right. Take care.
Take care. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout from Joe Black.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be Jen Glantz, author of the new book, Always a Bridesmaid for Hire. And of course, listen to all of our Too Jewish podcasts on iTunes at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Friend us on Facebook. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from our guest, Rabbi Joe Black. It's his song, Leave a Little Bit Undone. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
In the pueblos of northern New Mexico, the artists show their wares. Sitting on their blankets with their baskets and their bowls on display in the pure desert air. Look very closely, you will see a tiny flaw in their perfect symmetry. Nothing that we do is ever finished. We are all diminished by our own mortality. So whatever you do, leave a little bit undone. Don't think that you're the only one to bear the heavy load. Wherever you go, never journey to the end. There's always another bend further down the road. Further down the road. And in Machane Yehuda in Jerusalem, every vendor's stall. Look very closely, you can see it there, high on the eastern wall. Painter left a spot of bare plaster, as if to say, I am not the master, I cannot.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.